the Herald Tribune political editor, Zach Anderson, and I'm joined, as always, by Gatehouse, Florida Capitol reporter, John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hi, Zach.
Well, today is Halloween, and we've got a veritable horror show of frightening Florida political news for you. Teachers might be spooked to hear that Governor Ron DeSantis' promised pay raise is meeting resistance in the legislature. Meanwhile, business owners could be dreading the news that Florida's minimum wage could soon increase to $15 an hour after petition gatherers collected enough signatures to get the proposal on the ballot in 2020. We'll talk about both of those issues and the terrifying state of the Florida GOP right now. But first, you know what that music means. It's pick a number time. John, what frightening number do you have for us today? Or were you too tired from watching Game 7 of the World Series to come up with something?
No, not at all. This being Halloween week, I was looking for something keeping in that theme. Did you know, for example, that the state capitol is only 28 miles from Monticello, Florida, which ABC Television has called the most haunted small town in the U.S.? It's got, you know, a proliferation of old homes where, well, people have died, and a 19th century opera house for Phantom fans. But enough of the Halloween talk. I've conjured up another number. 3,943.
Not 28 miles from Monticello, 3,943. Well, that is an interesting fact about Monticello, Florida, which we don't mention enough on this podcast.
That's true. We need more.
Well, my number is so minimal, it might scare people with its simplicity. I'm going with a one today. That's one for Zach Anderson, 3,943 for John Kennedy. Write those numbers down, folks, and we'll tell you what they mean for Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, Governor Ron DeSantis and legislative leaders gathered earlier this week for the annual Associated Press Legislative Preview Day at the Capitol. They talked about their priorities heading into the 2020 legislative session, which begins in January, and took questions from reporters. DeSantis continued to pitch his plan to raise the starting salary in Florida for teachers to $47,500. But the proposal was questioned by some of the legislative leaders who spoke after the governor. John, what were lawmakers saying about DeSantis's proposal?
Yeah, they've been kind of chewing on this for a little while. DeSantis rolled this idea out a few weeks ago, while a pay raise always sounds good, it's got some issues. Like, you know, what does this do for veteran teachers who, if they're earning more than this minimum, won't get anything out of this deal? It could also compress salary ranges to where you have a first-year teacher earning almost as much as some longtime veterans in the classroom. It's also difficult to impose in Florida this kind of statewide increase because teacher salaries are something that are dictated both by what amount of money the state hands out to counties and funding, but also in negotiations, typically between a county school board and the local teachers union. The biggest teachers union in the state, the Florida Education Association, they've embarked on their own. They're doing a statewide bus tour trying to tout the needs for a big increase in education this year, a 10% boost in per pupil spending and a 10% pay raise for all school employees. Now DeSantis, you know, he's just scoffing at this notion from the FEA, which, you know, always endorses Democrats in statewide elections. Here's the governor's view of what the FEA said.
It's just funny, though. I mean, like, look, let's not pretend there's not politics involved in this. I mean, it's just the fact of the matter. I'm a Republican. They're not. And so what I'm doing is never going to be enough. And my job is not to do what the union wants. It's what I think is best for education and particularly for individual teachers.
Well, wait a minute, Governor. It wasn't just Democrats poking holes in the idea. Republican Senate President Bill Galvano said the idea needs refining. One thing he's clearly concerned about is the pay raise's $600 million price tag, coming as an economic slowdown has most state spending tightening up. He's pretty measured in what he said. If you listen to the soundbite, you may say tortured, but here's how Galvano sees the talk of the raise.
We actually share priorities in subject matters such as the environment, such as education. We have our committee on education appropriations is looking at the teacher raise issue, for example, and how that might work and some of the policies around it. but we cannot make a commitment to a specific number.
Well, that's not good for the governor. Galvano was seen as a key ally on this teacher pay idea since House Speaker Jose Oliva, a Miami Republican, who he didn't make this week's news event in Tallahassee, but he's already given the pay raise idea a pretty tepid welcome, kind of dissing the amount of spending the governor's agencies have already proposed and talking how basically there's only so much money to go around. The average teacher salary in Florida last year was $48,486. And more than two-thirds of instructors earn less than $50,000 annually. Florida's been ranked 48th among the states in teacher pay. So new teachers earn even less. Their average starting pay is about $38,000. So, you know, a lot of people say that these low salaries are what's contributing to high number of vacancies and rapid turnover of teachers. So there's going to be some momentum for DeSantis' idea somehow, but it's just not that easy to do. And, you know, while DeSantis is talking about the politics behind the criticism, there's also a view that there's politics behind this proposal as well, where there's a view that, you know, what better way to discourage union joining by the new teachers than to promise them a decent salary as soon as they walk in the door to their first job? The Florida legislature, Republican-led, has long tried to blunt the influence of unions. So maybe this minimum salary idea has some union-busting quality to it as well. So there's a lot to unpack with this, you know, seemingly simple idea from the governor.
Right. And it's pretty funny for him to say, you know, oh, the unions, they're all engaged in politics. They're politicians. And, you know, you could argue that the governor's proposal is you know, floating a popular idea that could help him down the road, help him win over teachers and people who have family members who are teachers and just people who support stronger investment in education. I mean, it's definitely a populist proposal there. And in some ways, you know, you talk, John, about Galvano and him talking about how they got to make sure this is workable. It seems like in some ways the politics and the simplicity of what DeSantis wants to do, giving every first year teacher $47,500, that's a nice simple number, a nice bumper sticker. But Galvano saying this is not, we got to make sure this is workable. I mean, it's not just that easy to set the starting teacher salary at $47,500 in every district, right? I mean, they have some control over this. There's some districts where the starting teacher salary might almost be close to $47,500 or over. I don't even know. Some of those districts, they might not even get a raise, which would totally negate the governor's proposal in those areas. I mean, when Galvano says this is workable, it's kind of like him saying, well, you threw out a nice bumper sticker phrase here, but we actually have to make this work legislatively, right?
Yeah, because the state largely, you know, turns over pools of money to the counties to distribute it when it comes to education, the way the state's so-called FEFP works, the financing of public schools. There are things called categoricals, where the districts are sort of bound to spend money in certain areas, whether that be things like you know, infrastructure or school buses and you know ancillary kind of services for the districts. But when it comes to pay raise, that kind of comes out of the big pool of money that is handed out to each county, and the county school boards are the ones that pretty much work out the pay raises with their local bargaining unit. And that's kind of how it's set. So it's very difficult for the state to sort of step in and say, here is a minimum salary that must be met. And as you point out, it depends, one Florida is such a diverse state. You have a very rural county where this may look like vast riches, $47,500 a year in Florida. But in Miami-Dade, Greater Orlando, the Tampa Bay area, that doesn't go too far.
A little bit more complicated than just saying that you want to hit this number. So we'll see how this gets diced up as they take it through the legislative process. Well, DeSantis may want to hike teacher pay, but he's not so keen on hiking salaries for low-wage workers in the private sector. The governor spoke out against a proposed constitutional amendment that would increase Florida's minimum wage from to $15 an hour. The governor said it would hurt Florida's restaurant industry in particular, and he said it's a bad idea to lock those wages in through a constitutional amendment, which is hard to undo. Of course, the folks pushing for the $15 minimum wage disagree. They're led by Orlando trial attorney John Morgan, who also led the charge for medical marijuana in Florida. And just like Morgan got that passed into law, he's also been making progress on the minimum wage proposal. This week, Morgan's group, Florida for a Fair Wage, announced that they have collected enough signatures, 766,260, to get on the ballot in 2020. The last step is a review by the state Supreme Court to determine if the ballot language is clear and not misleading. John, the governor might not like this proposal, but a lot of Florida workers would be happy to get a pay raise. Do you think this has a chance of passing?
Oh, yeah. I think this would move the minimum wage from currently $8.46 an hour to $10 in 2021, and then increase it $1 a year until it hits $15 an hour in 2026. So far, it surprisingly hasn't drawn that much fire from business groups, but DeSantis cranked it up this week when he was speaking to a business association, saying that it's basically going to wreak havoc on the restaurant industry. And he's also criticized the idea of creating such policy in the Constitution, which is a topic that he's talked about before. The Supreme Court may hold oral arguments on this ballot measure in early December, which would give a number of potential opponents a chance to take shots at it. It's possible that attention to this may rise, given that, this could really become a vote driver in Florida, which is seen as a must-win state for President Trump. And DeSantis, as we all know, is one of the governor's most loyal disciples right now. If a minimum pay increase is seen as sending more lower-income voters to the polls, is that a potential driver of Democrats? Or given Trump's base, could it help him? That may be a little bit contrarian. I think generally it's seen as likely helping Democratic turnout overall. If it's going to get on the ballot and Trump is in a tight race in Florida, DeSantis may hope that the Florida Supreme Court, whose seven members have all been appointed by Republican governors, that they may find a way to knock it off the ballot for some, constitutional issue or misleading ballot language or covering more than one subject. Those are the usual ground rules for whether a ballot measure is considered, appropriate and constitutional for the ballot.
It seems on the face of it pretty straightforward. I mean, hiking the minimum wage to $15 an hour gradually. So it would be fascinating to see if somehow they argue that this is not clearly stated what they're doing here. You mentioned that these constitutional amendments, some people see them as driving turnout. The medical marijuana that passed in 2016, right?
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, and I think there was talk about that driving Democratic turnout as well. But obviously, Trump ended up winning the state, and we've had a number of other constitutional amendments that were pushed by more liberal leaning groups. Republicans have done pretty well here. Do you think that, if Democrats are relying on this to get them over the top, they might be disillusioned?
Oh, I know. No, you're absolutely right. There does seem to be a number of these fake outs that the Democrats have looked to as being something that was going to turn the tide for voting. Just 2 years ago in the governor's race, there was the Amendment 4, felons voter restoration, which, indeed, helped pump up some turnout. It was a good turnout in the governor's race, but guess what? We have a Republican governor won. There was a feeling at that time that Amendment 4 was going to be decisive in helping elect a Democratic governor, but DeSantis prevailed very narrowly in that race. And as you pointed out, in 2016, medical marijuana, that being on the ballot, that did not stop Donald Trump from carrying Florida. So once again, if this is on the ballot, as I'd mentioned, it seems like the conventional wisdom is that it's going to help Democrats. But when you think about Trump's base of voters, Trump does not have a vast base of wealthy people necessarily voting for him. There are a lot of blue-collar, underemployed Floridians that seem to side with a lot of what Trump says. So maybe those are the people that turn out.
So they might like a pay raise as well. This could draw some Trump voters too. That being said, these constitutional amendments haven't really helped Democrats or not helped them enough in the past. It is a little bit different when you're talking about putting money in people's pockets. That kind of tends to be a bit of a motivator when you can actually go and vote yourself a pay raise. So who knows? This could be one that draws more people to the ballot that aren't regular voters than we've seen in the past. Well, lastly, the most frightening Florida political news this Halloween week, maybe the state of the Republican Party of Florida. It seems like the drama just keeps on building. First, Governor Ron DeSantis pushed to get veteran political operative Susie Wiles removed from President Donald Trump's Florida campaign, part of an effort by DeSantis to exert more control over the Republican Party of Florida. Then it was reported by Politico that DeSantis wanted to slash the salary of Florida GOP chair Joe Gruters and use the money to increase the salary of the party's executive director, Peter O'Rourke. And floating that salary cut was viewed as an attempt to force Gruters to resign or put pressure on him. Then it came out recently that O'Rourke has a lot of baggage of his own from his time working for Trump as a leader in the Department of Veteran Affairs. There was an Inspector General report that says O'Rourke retaliated against whistleblowers and acted inappropriately in a number of other ways. And then the latest bit of drama came earlier this week when the party announced it was postponing its big annual fundraiser, another blow for Gruters. Politico reported that ticket sales were lackluster and Gruters had yet to secure a keynote speaker. Governor Ron DeSantis then announced the very next day that the event was back on and Trump would be the keynote speaker. So it looks like DeSantis may have stepped in to rescue the event and nip it in the bud, this growing narrative of dysfunction within the party. But John, it still seems like there's plenty of discord simmering right beneath the surface, right?
There sure does. There's clearly an effort to unseat Sarasota Senator Joe Gruters as the Republican Party chairman. And, you know, he was an original Trump guy, but lately it seems that DeSantis is trying to exert more control over the party. He handed Gruters a new executive director in Peter O'Rourke, who served in the Trump administration. And as you mentioned, pushed out of his own governor's orbit, Susie Wiles, the Republican strategist from the Jacksonville area, who helped him and also helped Trump. But somehow she was seen as having too much control within Republican circles. It's really all about the governor exerting control. And Gruters seems to be a guy who was a favorite of the previous governor, Rick Scott, who also now is outside of DeSantis's orbit. And Scott and DeSantis are both seen as potential Republican presidential contenders, you know, maybe in another 4 years. And so you have another Sunshine State rivalry brewing that seems very similar to what we had with Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. And meanwhile, you know, Gruters is trying to hang on, but he's looking like he could become collateral damage in this struggle.
It's kind of an odd dynamic. I mean, Susie Wiles helped get DeSantis across the finish line. I mean, he brought her on to run his campaign at the end. He appeared to be struggling. She helps get him across the finish line and then gets pushed aside. Gruters is, you know, he wasn't even, I don't think, in the running for party chair initially, wasn't even going for it. And then, you know, from my understanding of it was kind of tapped as sort of a compromise and got the blessing of the governor and was seen as a loyal ally of Trump. You know, you have these people that come into the governor's orbit and then, but it doesn't seem like he has fully trusted them. It seems like maybe there's some paranoia about whether these people are trying to undermine him or are not loyal to him. Do you sense that there's a little paranoia within the governor's inner circle?
Oh yeah, I think it's all of that. And maybe too, you know, it's funny, we look back only about maybe 4 months ago, I did a story when Governor DeSantis was reaching the 6-month mark of his term, and he was downplaying the amount of political work he'll be doing for the, for President Trump going forward. Now, I think there is heightened, awareness that Trump is in a must-win Florida kind of situation. And I think DeSantis feels very much that his own, DeSantis's own political future may be hinged on how does the president do in the upcoming election. So I think that feeling that it's all up to DeSantis. He wants to have control over it. He doesn't want to relegate that kind of influence to a guy like Joe Gruters from Sarasota, somebody who maybe he doesn't have that much of a relationship with, doesn't trust that much, and is also occupied with his own day job, which is being a state senator and more.
They were able to kind of get things back on track and get Trump coming down here, and so in the short term, that sort of sort of papers over any issues that they have. But it does seem like this is a story to watch if there's some dysfunction within the state party here in a critical state for Trump in 2020. That could be significant. I mean, you need every vote counts in Florida. It's a lot of close elections. And so party unity and having people working hand in hand can be very important. All right, well, we're going to move on to our pick a number segment. John, your number is 3,943. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's the amount of dollars that Florida would trail only New Jersey among the states in salaries for starting teachers if Governor DeSantis' pay raise idea gets embraced by the legislature. You know, DeSantis would bring the salaries to $47,500 a year. And for starting teachers, only New Jersey's $51,443 annual salary for first-year teachers is better. It would be amazing if Florida was topping New York, California, Massachusetts, Illinois, all these many states where you tend to think the salaries are so much better than Florida for so many things. Now, the DeSantis idea, as we mentioned, has quite a few hurdles to climb, but being number two for starting teacher salaries would be a pretty notable achievement for a state whose reputation for funding things on the cheap, you know, including maybe our kids' education, is pretty well known.
Yeah, normally Florida lawmakers don't like to compare themselves to California and New York and New Jersey, but on this issue, they might not mind. Well, my number is one, as in we're almost exactly 1 year away from the 2020 election. The election is on November 3rd, which is this Sunday. In some ways, the 1 year out measurement is kind of meaningless. These days, it's almost a nonstop election cycle. Trump filed for re-election just hours after his inauguration, and it has been the president's been holding campaign rallies really ever since. But as we get closer to 2020, the campaigning starts to heat up. Here in Florida, the Democratic Party has already deployed field organizers to register voters, and the GOP also is ramping up those efforts. This is the time, really, in the election cycle where the parties are still focused on building out their infrastructure and expanding the electorate by getting more people registered. But they're also working to recruit candidates. Some candidates have filed, some have begun to raise money, but this is still kind of a crunch time to get your field in place and get your slate ready for the 2020 election. So over the next few months, we're really going to see kind of the success that the parties have had with candidate recruitment, with fundraising, with getting all these pieces in place that are so critical before you get actually down to the weeks and months before the election. So the next year is going to be chock full of big political news here in Florida, and we'll be covering it all on this podcast. So we hope you keep tuning in. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Forty, Dono and Anna Fish. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.